All right, a few announcements before we begin. Depends on the clouds tomorrow, I suppose. But if you want to see the eclipse, Rich has some glasses for anybody that wants them. They're available after class so you don't burn your eyes out. And additionally, we are having, there'll be some people arriving here this week, the Becketts, and they'll be visiting. So tentatively, we are planning a church luncheon next Sunday, the 27th, be after class like we did before with the, what do we do, that weird ritual?
Baptism.
thank you. So we'll provide, tentatively the plan is, we'll provide, the church will provide for the meat and all of that, the main dish, and then if you want to bring something, dishes, I don't know what all is needed, but side dishes, drinks, desserts, that kind of thing, see Dina on that. And lastly, for those of you who are on the setup schedule, we want to start Sunday when you set up before anybody gets here. We have concocted this deal. I got this thing here, these cleaners. If you just wipe down the tables to disinfect them and deodorize them and all that, they'll either be here or in that, I think they're stored back there though, right? They're in that other pulpit back in the other side. So since we can leave the tables in here, I thought we ought to probably have them looking as clean as we could. And so the board thought it was a good idea just to wipe them down every week, and that way there's nobody in here then, and it can easily be done. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes or five, maybe, a setup. So, okay, if that didn't get you out of fellowship, if it did, rebound. If it didn't, then let's move on here as we'll get back to, we're looking at Roman numeral 5, the function of emotions. And as we pointed out, they're analogous in some ways to kidneys because there are two kinds of emotions. They're destructive, what we would call the negative emotions. But not all emotions that may be, quote, negative, like anger. Anger has a righteous manifestation. There is such a thing as righteous indignation. That one is upset because God is being slighted or his plan in some way. And so the reality is, of course, that most emotions we are to deal with and eliminate them, let them go. But others have a beneficial effect, like joy, happiness, awe, even. And again, if I get to that, I may just forward it so you can read it at your leisure. Well, emotions are the external means, again, by which the soul can overtly express the internal state of affairs and are not generally to be suppressed. I say not generally because obviously if you give in to an emotional outburst of anger, then you get into not only mental attitude sin of anger, but you're going to go overt with it verbally. And then if it escalates into a physical altercation, now you've taken it to the point of overt sinning. So some we have to stay on top of. We have to not give in to them. We have to say, look, I know I feel this way, but I've got to overrule this. I can't just continue to walk in this fashion and act this way because I, quote, feel this way. And to say that you feel this way and there's nothing you can do about it is a cop-out for a doctrinal believer. You can do things about your emotional feelings. And it involves overruling them. It involves thinking doctrine. It involves focusing your attention on the things that it should be. And in some cases, when these negative things crop up, of course, it's a manifestation that our focus isn't where it should be. And so it's hard to be upset with God if you are generally cultivating contentment and happiness and joy and love. These negative things have a much harder time. That doesn't mean you're not going to be attacked with them. You are. And the demons have a field day with emotional responses by humans because they're certainly good at reading them. And certainly know how to push people's buttons and keep them going. So if people that consistently suppress their emotions are often not dealing with the underlying issues or problems that prompted those emotions in the first place. One, it may seem that emotions stem from external. It may be that the emotions stem from some external problem that must be acknowledged and with which one must deal. So, for instance, I'll use a ludicrous example, but let's say your neighbor decides, for whatever reason, that they're going to park in your driveway every night. Well, first, they don't have the right to do that. And actually, without an express invitation, that's trespass. But let's say they do that. Let's say they park in your driveway every night. How are you going to handle it? Well, at first, you're probably going to be angry. Why are they doing that? I mean, it might be puzzlement. What are they doing and why? And then, of course, then after a while, it becomes frustrating, particularly if, say, you have to get up and leave early and you can't move your car because your neighbor's parked behind you. And so then that's going to lead to frustration, anxiety, anger. But how are you going to deal with that? To just stuff it down and say, well, I'm not ever going to deal with that and I'm going to let them keep doing it. That's not healthy. I mean, that's not healthy. You've got to address the issue at some point. And again, shouldn't necessarily be addressed through anger, but anger is going to be what prompts it most likely. It prompts the fact that you would address it. So, two, it may be that the emotions stem from some internal problem that one does not know exists or that one does not want to acknowledge. And the reality is, of course, the emotions can come as a result of a number of things. But we have to recognize, number one, what they are. What's happening here? Am I responding emotionally? I don't like what I'm hearing. I'm going to respond emotionally to it. Rather than say, okay, I'm going to be professional about this. I'm going to take it to heart. I'm going to think through it. I'm going to pray about it. You know, that's the way you should approach things. A more measured response is very often a better response. Now, not in every case, but in many cases it is. To take a step back, take a deep breath, and say, okay, what's really going on here? And when you're emotional, it's hard to do. I mean, the emotions work against that at some level. So, G, on the other hand, if an emotional response is not consistent with sound teaching, the believer should be careful about expressing and allowing harmful emotions to control them. One, when anger is not addressed, it may increase, and result in saying and doing things that are better not said or done. And I don't think that there's any one of us here who couldn't say, well, I know exactly what this is like. I have failed. I have given in to anger. I have not tried to fight it. And number one, the first thing I'll ask you is it pleasant? Was it fun? At the time, maybe you think, yeah, this is fun. I want to be angry. But the longer this goes on, the less fun it gets. And certainly after a certain point, it's not fun at all. And in some cases, it's not fun to start with. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder. And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. The mental attitude sin makes you guilty before God. Now, are you going to address that and deal with it, or are you just going to ignore it? And if you ignore it, well, then you're still guilty. You stay out of fellowship. You stay guilty in that sense before God. And whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. Now, that's not really, it's not a compliment. But it's not an insult like the next one is. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. And what Jesus is teaching here in these is that the law was never designed only to address the overt. And that's what the Jews sort of distorted the law into. An overt expression of righteousness outwardly. And the reality is righteousness must come from within. You can go through the motions. You can put on a show and pretend you're righteous. But real righteousness comes from within. It comes from orientation to God and His Word. And so, obviously, the danger here is that people don't recognize that the mental attitude sin is what prompts murder. Every one of these overt sins that people commit come from some mental attitude sin that they're not dealing with internally. And that has to be addressed. Well, believers have the capacity to... If a person gives constant expression to wrongs done to him or her, sad things that have happened, fears or other inappropriate things, they may descend into a worse emotional state like bitterness and or depression. Why? Because you consistently rehearse what's wrong. And we've all done this. I mean, there's nobody, I can't stand up here and say, oh, I've never done any of these things. I've done every one of these things I'm talking to you about today. And to constantly dwell on the past, or when the past comes up, what's the emotional response or even the mental response of a believer to be? Ideally, we're to say, that's in the past, let it go. forgetting about what lies behind. Can we change it? No. Does it serve me to dwell on it? No. Will it make it any better? Nope. In fact, the longer you do this, the more danger you're in. Because then you're going to start thinking along another inappropriate line, and then it'll go overt eventually if you continue to dwell on it. And this is why, of course, when we sin and we rebound, aren't we all grateful that when you sin and you go to God and acknowledge it through rebound, 1 John 1:9 there, that you do that, aren't you glad He forgives you and then forgets about it? Or would you prefer God just retain it and say, well, I'm going to bring this up later. I'm not done with this yet. But when God forgives, He forgets. He said, I will remove your sins from you as far as the east is from the west. Well, those two never meet. That's kind of the whole point. Those two are in opposite directions. And God says, I'm going to move them away from you essentially to infinity, we might say. And so, aren't we glad when that happens? Well, when we have to deal with it, we have to be willing to do the same thing. We have to emulate our Father. And that is not only forgive, it means forget. It means don't dwell on it. When it comes to your mind, who do you think's bringing it to your mind? You think it's God the Holy Spirit? I don't think so. He would be into the forgiving and forgetting thing. I mean, if I've read the Spirit right, I think that's what He's into. So who's doing it? Is it demonic? Is it your own flesh? Either way, it doesn't matter. You're still supposed to reject it. I said this particularly if it's demonic. I would think it's not good to cooperate with the demons. What's the Bible say about cooperating with demons? It's against it. You know, watch Kingpin, you'll get it. While believers have the capacity to appreciate temporal things as well as spiritual things, the unbeliever can only experience emotions related to this life. To his life is fine. And experiences in the temporal realm. So their emotions are limited by no doctrinal content, no doctrinal appreciation, no doctrinal understanding. Well, Roman numeral 6 here, the old sin nature and its impact on the emotions. At the point of the fall and the introduction of the old sin nature into the genetics of humanity, spiritual death was the immediate result. Again, very clearly taught here in Romans 5:12. The corrected translation here, on this account, and Paul is actually shifting, he uses this construction to shift his focus. He has dealt with the matter of salvation, the need for salvation by faith, that it's not by works. And now he launches into what brought all this about in the first place. Now that we have, as in Romans 5:1-11, is really about the post-salvation state. Well, how did we get to the point where we needed salvation? Romans 5:12 addresses it. On this account, just as through one man, the sin nature entered into the world. And again, when Adam sinned, that sin was imputed to the flesh that created it. That's where it came from. And a choice of Adam's volition. And the sin then renders the flesh sinful. Now, that is what kills Adam, is when the imputation of that sin hits that flesh. And his flesh became sinful. That's where spiritual death comes from. So that if he passes on that sinful nature to anyone else, all his progeny, in fact, then they are likewise born spiritually dead because they possess a sin nature. And again, we don't have to be charged with Adam's crime. None of that is really true. Fanciful exegesis, as I call it. Don't stick with the text. Make it up as you go. And if it sounds good and unique and people are into this mentality, some people, not everybody, but some are into this breakthrough mentality. I've got to see something new that nobody else has seen before. You know, if I go to the Grand Canyon, I don't care how many people have seen it before. It's still the Grand Canyon. You know? I don't look at the Bible and think, oh man, I've got to dazzle them. I've got to come up with something new and exciting. No, that will get you into trouble, that mentality. If you've got that mentality as a pastor, you're going to fail. So again, one man, the sin nature entered into the world and spiritual death through the sin nature. As a consequence, spiritual death spread to all men. Why? Because the sin nature. See, what Paul's arguing here is there's a universal effect. It's spiritual death. Therefore, there must be a universal cause. What is the universal cause? The sin nature. The sin nature is the universal cause. The spiritual death is the universal effect. And so death, spiritual death, spread to all men. On the basis of which death, all sinned. So, and some want to take this verse and twist it around just backwards. They want to say because they sinned, they became sinners. No, you were born a sinner. You didn't have to commit one sin to be a sinner. You were born a sinner. You were born spiritually dead with a sin nature. And, of course, if that's perpetuated to the grave, then you don't have a relationship with God and you spend eternity apart from Him. But God has provided the out for all mankind. Everybody, it's God's will for all men to be saved. Well, then if it's His will for all men to be saved, He has to provide a mechanic whereby all men can. And He has, and that mechanic is faith in His Son. The Lord Jesus Christ, the focal point of all history. Everything in history, even our calendars divided by His presence. Or coming, as we might say. And the reality is, again, here, you're born spiritually dead, you can't help it. Well, with the introduction of the genetic sin nature there, spiritual death's the immediate result. Be in the spiritual realm, the realm into which all men were born. The old sin nature became the sole ruler of life. Romans 5:21, and for all unbelievers, this is the way it is. Verse again, the corrected translation here at Ron's, so that as the sin nature reigned in death, and that should be in spiritual death. I did not make the correction there, but it's got thanatos with the definite article, and Paul's careful through this section. When he's speaking of spiritual death, to use the definite article. When he's speaking of the sin nature, he uses the definite article as well. So that as the sin nature reigned in the sphere of spiritual death. All unbelievers are out here. They've got a king. Their king is their old sin nature. And the old sin nature rules over them in an unbroken line that they can't fix. And this ought to make them wonder, is there nothing more to life than this? You know? And again, if people understood the mechanics and the dynamic of all of this, they would say, oh, well, I want out. I'll take the free gift of salvation in Christ. So even so, grace would reign through righteousness to eternal life. So see, whatever genetic alterations occurred at the fall would also have an impact on the emotions. Since the soul is interfaced with the body in a way that is not fully understood. And again, Penfield's book, The Mystery of the Mind, he was really searching for the source of consciousness. It wasn't as though he was saying, I think the humans have a soul. I think they're bipartite, dual nature. And he was searching for the seat of consciousness. Where does consciousness reside in the brain? And as near as he could pin it down, it was somewhere in the higher brain stem, where the brain stem interfaces down into the spinal cord. And also then the soul is somewhere in there. Why does you feel like your consciousness is in your head? Because it is. I've never felt like my consciousness was here. What are you doing? Hello, Mrs. Torrance. My consciousness is not there. It's up here. And you're consciously aware of the fact that you exist here in your head. And it's not just your physiological thinking processes, the synapses firing and the axons and the neurons and the interneural pathways and all that. That's all happening. We're not debating that. That's all happening. But there is a consciousness that resides here that isn't fully understood by science. And because they don't understand it, they can't quantify it. And because they can't quantify it, they can't quantify the results of it. And that leaves them in a bit of a mess. Because they don't understand the fundamental nature of man. How can you evaluate what you don't understand in the first place? If you're going to do some expose on anything, you've got to understand the particulars of it. And if you don't, well, then you shouldn't be trying to do an expose on it. Well, at the point of Adam's fall, Satan became the new ruler of the world. Adam was given authority over this planet. And he was told that specifically. I give all things to you. Rule over these. Rule over the works of my hands. Rule over the fish of the air, fish of the sea, rather, birds of the air, fish of the air, those are tough ones, but the birds of the air and all of that. And rule over all my creation. And God gave his authority to Adam. And you know what he did? He turned around and handed it to Satan. Now, did he know he was doing it? No. But this is exactly what happened. Again, if people understand the mechanics of what happened and why the world's in the mess that it's in, and it has to do with satanic darkness invading this world. But it didn't invade accidentally, and it didn't invade without being invited. Adam invited Satan in. And Eve, they listened to it. Now, Adam wasn't fooled on the one hand, but he still sinned. And he's still the cause of the fall. He's the one that's attributed to it at any rate. He's the responsible one. So Satan became the new ruler of the world, usurping the authority that Adam had forfeited when he sinned. Now we have a new ruler of this world. It's not man anymore. It's Satan and the demons. And their spiritual realm of darkness and their web of lies and deceits are how they control and manipulate the human race. Very much trying to convince humans the here and now is all there is. Don't think long term. Don't think about your soul or eternity or God or any of the weightier matters of life. And that's why they've got this in the last days, and it works like a charm. It's this constant white noise, everything in your ear all the time. And you can't get away from it, although we should. Turn it off, unplug, go outside for God's sake. Get a little sunshine. And by the way, you need a little sunshine every day. It wouldn't hurt you. It's good for your vitamin D production. And you don't have to have a lot of sunshine. But some is good. And so Satan becomes the ruler of the world. He's more than happy to take this. And now he is the squatter that's going to have to be ejected. He's going to have to be evicted. And he's not going to go willingly or easily. It's going to be a destructive fight to get rid of him. And but God will go through all that is necessary. And the human race will suffer the brunt of it. Because the problem is, once you're identified with evil and you don't make that break, you get the discipline that evil deserves. That's the problem with the human race. They're condemned and don't even know it. And of course, if you go around telling people, hey, by the way, you're condemned. Do you like that? They won't like it. God has condemned you in righteousness. Under the principle of the fall, spiritual death, your sin nature, and the demonic and satanic realm that works with all this. So, at that point, the emotions gained a new influence. Via access through the indwelling sin nature, Satan can inject his evil into the human race. And people have certainly responded to that evil. And so the sin nature gives Satan his in. He can say, okay, here is the vein. All I got to do is hit it. And he knows how to hit it, believe me. He's good at this. He knows evil up and down. That's all he knows, in fact. Jesus said there's nothing good in him at all. There's nothing left that's any good. Of course, you know, you got the Satanists out there, actual people who worship Satan, and some of these other religions, Wicca and all of this. And they say, well, Satan's just misunderstood. No, I understand him. He's not misunderstood. He's not some white knight that's been given a bad name. He actively is organized evil. And that's all he is. That's all he's about. And he'll present that evil in any form people like it. And that's where he's really good at adaptation. He can adapt his evil to whatever form you'd like to hear. And he doesn't mind. Because all he's got to do is make sure you don't get the truth. That's his key element. That's his kryptonite, the truth. He can't stand it. He can't handle it. It demoralizes him and neutralizes him. This is why you have to learn how to handle the sword of the Spirit, the word of truth. Your weapons in the fight against this. Well, obviously, when one is influenced by an evil genius like Satan, or when he accepts faulty information in the form of some input into the soul that originates with the old sin nature, the emotions can be adversely affected. You have two forms of evil. Satan uses the sin nature, and the sin nature, as it were, from seeing in Romans, hopefully you saw this, we might say, the sin nature has a mind of its own. Yeah, it is. It's your unregenerate brain. That's the mind it uses. Our pre-salvation self. That's what Satan likes. That's what the sin nature likes. That is, in fact, that's an expression of your sin nature, your pre-salvation self. And, of course, we're told to put all that off like you would put off a set of clothes. Take your clothes off. Take the old sin nature off and put on some new clothes. Put on the new man. And let him run the show as he sees fit. So, gee, in other words, those under the influence of evil will find it difficult, if not impossible, to have a normal doctrinal emotional reaction to the many things that occur in life. What is the normal doctrinal reaction to teaching? If you're in fellowship, it should be acceptance and joy. If you're out of fellowship, it's anger and bitterness, and I hate him and I wish he was dead. I mean, I've literally had people walk out of Bible class and say that. I wish I could choke him. But they didn't think I heard him. Well, I heard. And so, you know, really get off the property before you start venting. And it wasn't here. But just to let you know, I may hear. Or another believer may hear. Hopefully nobody's walking out of here venting. That's not the goal. The goal is to get you to orient. So again, if you're under the influence of evil, if you're under the sin nature, and the sin nature itself is evil, actually, in Romans chapter 7, Paul makes that plain. And he discusses the contradictory sort of lifestyle that a believer finds himself in. And I like to call it the curse of the positive believer. You know? And that is, you can't be happy running under your sin nature. It will make you miserable eventually. And that's good. That's healthy. It's healthy that you have a conscience and you say, yeah, I'm listening and I see that I'm wrong. See, most people will never get to the point where they can admit they're wrong. If you can't admit you're wrong, you're hamstrung in the angelic conflict. Because we're all wrong so much of the time. We all stumble in many ways. We just want to get this right and be on the right side of things. So when he talks about this life that he was facing, as he says in verse 15, "What I am doing, I do not understand. For I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I am doing the very thing I hate. But if I do what I don't want to do, I'm agreeing with the law. I'm acknowledging that the law is good." See, God's law is right. Righteousness, the principles of righteousness are correct. Fact is, even as a believer, sometimes we can't live up to them, or we choose not to, is closer to the truth. But with the indwelling sin nature, you're never going to live up to this perfectly. So now, once I'm out of fellowship, he says, I'm no longer the one doing it. The sin nature dwells in me, is controlling, is calling the shots. And when the sin nature is in charge, nothing good comes of it. I mean, nothing good from the divine viewpoint. Now, God can obviously use these things down the road and weave even our failures into a fabric of reality, which he's doing, that has all of our best interests at heart, at least our best interests in terms of being conformed to the image of Christ. This is where all things work together for the good end of being conformed to Christ. That's what he's talking about. So for the good I want to do, he says. Well, actually, verse 18. For I know that nothing good dwells in me. That is, in my flesh. I recognize that I want to do the right things, but my flesh doesn't. My flesh is more than happy to go the path of least resistance. To just run. To take it easy. To take the easy way out. For the good I want to do, I do not do. But I practice the very evil, and there it is. He says this evil comes out of his sin nature. The very evil that I don't want to do. So I find the principle, verse 21, that evil is present in me, the one who wants to do good. And so, and again, many theologians and all over the years have gotten around all this and said, well, by God, God's got to get rid of the sin nature. Well, he does, but he's not going to do it in this life. He leaves us here to grow through this and to fight and to grow up and to overcome this monster. He who overcomes, there's lots of blessings for them. Revelation. See specifically chapters 2 and 3. Lots of blessings for the overcomer that are promised. What does he have to overcome? Well, number one, first and foremost, you've got to overcome your own sin nature. This is a fight only you can fight. And while I pray for you and I encourage you and I want you to do well, my whole goal is to get you to the Bema seat intact, not only intact, but with great blessing, with great glory. And if that's not what you want, well, then we're not on the same page. But if that is what you want, which I presume it is, then we continue to plug away at this, giving the diet and all that believers need to grow up spiritually and to attain to this great glory. So again, those who are, and you see Paul here, he's frustrated. And he manifests. And again, most interpreters cannot deal with these passages. They have got them so hamstrung, they don't know what to do with them. But it's pretty straightforward if you follow it and let the Greek speak for itself. And know what he means when he talks about the sin nature and all that. So age further, those that are negative and reject what light they are given will manifest even more bizarre emotional responses to what they confront in the world. We saw that in Romans 1, that the reason... So why is the world in the shape that it's in? Some people say, well, they just don't have the truth. And of course, I've heard this, I don't know, dozens and dozens of times when I was a fundamentalist. Well, the people out there are just dying for the truth. Are they? Or are they dying to go to baseball games, watch golf, play video games, text, play with their cell phone, Facebook, a million other things, but they're not that interested in the truth. They're willing to do almost anything but the truth. We're coming up to the glorious time of the year when 60, 70, 80,000 people will sit on a metal bench in sub-zero temperatures to cheer on their team. 60, 70, 80, 100,000 in the big house up there in Ann Arbor. You know, you can get a bunch, and these people will fill these places. And you advertise sound doctrine, and we'll see how it goes. Try to compete with that. Why? Because the world doesn't really want this. They want to be entertained. They want what they want. And the truth falls far down the list if it's there at all. If it's even there in their priorities. Their priorities tend to be family, self, actually first to self, because they never get past that. They can't. Self, family, job, friends, and that's about the way their life goes. And the truth is not in there. You don't hear Bible class face to face. That's not in their vocabulary. And yet we take it as a given. Well, Romans 1, are they really anxious for the truth? No. Why? Because that which is known, verse 19, about God. Let me just look here. That which can be understood about God is a better translation. I know I've corrected most of this. That which can be understood. What can you understand about God is evident within them because God made it evident to them. So when a person tells you, I'm an atheist, an agnostic, they are looking at you and lying. They know there's a God. They just don't want to admit it. So they cover it up with lies and deceit and other forms of false doctrine. But they know deep down. I knew deep down from the time I was 5 or 6. I can remember my earliest conscious thoughts. And I remember thinking, okay, where did this all come from? And it led me to the conclusion somebody must have created it. Well, it's big. Very big. Oh, by the way, speaking of which is big. I see that, you know, the Voyager, by the way, is still going out there. Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. And these things are apparently still working out there. And I got to thinking about that in terms of this goofy flat Earth theory. And I thought about all the fake pictures we've got of space. They're all fake. They're all frauds. This is part of a huge conspiracy to deceive believers into believing the Earth is round. Now, but wait a second. Why would Satan be interested in that? Doesn't he have bigger fish to fry than what shape the planet is? You would think. I mean, being evil and all. You know. You'd figure he's interested in dragging people to hell. I mean, watch South Park. Satan's not a good guy. Don't watch it. You're wasting your time. But if you choose to, they have some episodes where Satan's in it. And of course, this is, you know, he's the devil. He's red and he's got a pitchfork and he's, you know, real gross. But don't you think he'd have a bigger deal? Well, where are all the fake pictures of the flat Earth? Actually, let me see one. If this is the case, show me a picture. And they can't. But we have hundreds, thousands, millions maybe pictures of space and the Earth and all of this. And that's all a conspiracy, but you can't show me one picture of a flat Earth. Not one. And I was kidding somebody at Oklahoma the other day. It has been actually a couple of months back now. But, you know, they called and it was about, it was probably about 8 o'clock our time or 7 or something. I take it back. It was like 9 our time because it was already dark. And it was like 8:30 or 9 or something. And I answered the phone and they said something about this flat earth deal. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Look outside. They said, okay. I said, is it daylight there? And they said, yeah. I said, well, it's dark here. We're only 1,500 miles apart. If the earth is flat, we should both be able to see the sun. That's not very much. I mean, 1,500 miles is not much in terms of the cosmic scope of things. I said, how come I can't see the sun, but you can? The earth isn't flat. And there's no, I mean, this, the nonsense of this. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, the satanic joke here is on the people that think that there's a satanic joke. That somehow Satan's convinced the people that the universe isn't what it is. Let me ask you, what's more impressive? A flat earth and a sheet cake, as it were. Or this great elaborate design in which planets are spinning, traveling through space at thousands of miles an hour. The universe is, as far as we understand it, still expanding. And there's got to be an end to that, obviously. And so, what is it, which requires a greater God? Well, to me, the one that can keep, you know, planets orbiting around each other, gravity. And so people say, well, gravity is a result of the spin of the planet. That's not true, because other planets spin. So why does Earth have gravity and other planets don't? And don't tell me it's the spin, because they'll spin. And then the irony is, you go out there and some of the planets spin this way and some of them spin this way. Mm-hmm. Well, why that? And you get into the matter of the atomic level of life and all of this. And it all makes pretty much perfect sense. The periodic table isn't an accident. It wasn't just fortuitous. People recognize that these things are real. They recognize that the three forms of hydrogen all differ by, you know, merely, I believe, one neutron. And that's it. And so they've categorized this. They recognize it. Science has done a great job in that sense of putting the fact that the Earth is a physical reality and understanding it in some ways out there. But again, you get down to the subatomic level, nothing makes much sense. If you start studying quarks and these subatomic particles, what they say is it doesn't make it, it's like it's very random. Now, everything here at the atomic level is very orderly. Subatomic level, it's not like you think. You'd think it'd be orderly. No, it's just random, complete randomness. They don't do anything like they know. This is not, by the way, basic chemistry. You all probably know this. If you mix an acid and a base together, what do you get? You get salt and a water every time. Every time. Now, is this accidental? It can't be. So when they see this, what can be figured out about God is evident within them, because God made it plain to them. Now, they reject it because of the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and eternal divinity have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. If you have eyes and can look at this world, and you come to the conclusion there's no God, you're a fool. You're an absolute idiot. I don't care what you think your IQ is. You're a moron. Because the reality is, you have to account for so many things, and not just life itself. I mean, the nature of the creation, the diversity out there. You gotta love the bombardier beetle. If you don't, you go check him out. The bombardier beetle carries within it two gases, both of which are lethal. And when mixed together, form an explosion. And yet the beetle never blows up. Isn't it wonderful evolution? How did that come about? Now that's cool. Now, because when he's under attack, the beetle will expel these two gases and boom, and it's kind of a small explosion right in the face of its attacker. And the beetle runs off. Well, I'd kind of like to have that. Shock and awe, you mean? Yeah. If you can do that. Well, how come the beetle doesn't blow up? These two gases mixed together in the same animal should kill it. Why don't they? Interesting. Why not? So, again, you look at the diversity out here. And you think about this matter of evolution. If you think through it very seriously. How did the eyeball evolve? And isn't it fortunate that it evolved with an eyelid at the same time? And all that. Because if it hadn't, well, the eyeball wouldn't have any protection. And you look at the nature of cells. And the fact is, anybody will tell you that the cells in different parts of the body are different types of cells. They're not all the same. They're specialized. You got cells that do this, cells that do that. And you got the mother cells, of course, the stem cells from which they come. But the reality is the body is quite diverse. And it's very, I mean, again, how did it, in terms of evolution. Okay, so we got these animals in the sea. They become whatever it is, starts with plankton or something even smaller than that. And then they gradually morph into fish. They gradually morph into whales. They gradually morph into frogs. They gradually morph, I don't know, how the frog to the human, that's a big leap, but still, pun intended. Let's play leapfrog. Let's just jump over the clues. No. Which evolved first, his legs so he could walk or his eyes so he could see where he's going? I mean, it's going to be really rough if you don't have eyes. I don't care how advanced you are. I think if you ask any person out there that's not sighted if they would rather see, I think they would tell you yes. So you look at all this. How do you say there's no God? You're an idiot. You haven't examined the evidence. You think you're so smart. And yet you won't even examine the evidence. It's here. So that, and then we see in verses 28, this chapter, their responses to things. Well, they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. Just as they did not see fit to do this, God gave them over to a depraved mind. And see, the human being is either moving in the direction toward God, or he's moving away from him and he's decelerating. And decaying. And of course the outer man's decaying as it is. But these people are decaying because of their depraved minds. They don't want the truth in there. It gets in their way. Because let's face it, if we admit there's a God, then we have to at least ask the hard questions. Is this deal about Jesus, is any of that truth or not? Now, none of us obviously lived in that time. We'd have to do research. But people research the past and they come to conclusions. I mean, they still can't date him. But they all believe there was an epic poet named Homer. But nobody knows when he lived. There's so much more information about Jesus Christ and the historical events related to him than there are most ancient events. And then you got things you have to account for. Like, why is the Bible the only ancient document that's really survived the test of history? Not the originals, but the text itself. Why is that? And, we've got all the works of Shakespeare, pretty much. But when did Shakespeare live again? Wasn't that 16th, 17th century? And 500 years ago, we got all that. But yet the Bible's 3,500 years old, the oldest portions of it. And we still have that. Even though we don't have the originals, we still have the text. How do you account for that longevity? Why don't we have all of the Code of Hammurabi? Why don't we have these ancient documents in the totality? They haven't been preserved. So how do you account for one document out of essentially all of human history that has a history that is just mind-boggling in terms of its preservation, that it's here? Unless you take the words of Jesus seriously, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words won't pass away. Now you take that seriously, then it makes perfect sense. So God gives them over to a depraved mind to do the things they want, and it's not good. The laundry list of what they do is not good. And then, verse 32, although they have recognized the righteous judgment of God. They know that God is righteous. See, this is the thing. People don't want to admit. If you admit there's a God, what kind of character does he have? Who is he? Has he revealed anything about himself since he's much greater than we are? Is there anything we can know for certain about him? And the answer is yes. They recognize, number one, that he's righteous and that he judges. Even unbelievers know this. They don't want to admit it. I mean, my God, would you? I'm here. I'm headed for hell. I don't like God. I hate him. I don't want to spend time thinking about that stuff. Of course they don't. So they those who practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but they give hearty approval to those who practice them. Well, Roman numeral 7 here, the rulership of the soul and the content of the soul as related to the emotions. A, with the introduction of the genetic nature into humanity, the emotions are capable of responding to the old sin nature. And their legitimate function was corrupted. Okay, that's what we have to know going in. Sometimes my emotions are going to give me bad reads. You say, well, I got to trust my emotions. No, you don't. Stop right there. No, you don't. And in fact, there's nothing in the Bible, there's no moral imperative to trust yourself. In fact, cursed is the man who trusts in the arm of flesh. I would counter with that. The emotions are corrupted. And this is what we have to know, that sometimes we don't respond emotionally correctly because of the sin nature. And when we give expression to it, we're not doing the right thing there. Be those unbelievers living under the control of the genetic sin nature manifest a glaring number of inappropriate emotional responses. Consider the liberal unbeliever that displays more emotional concern for the criminal than for the victim. And this is a reality that we've known about for years, the liberal agenda of eliminating capital punishment, in fact, of eliminating all forms of punishment. Let's eliminate consequences for actions. That's where they would like to go, but God's not going to allow that to happen because his deterministic universe is in a cause and effect framework. That there is an effect. For every cause, there is an effect, and for every effect, there was a preceding cause. And which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken. There you go. I've answered the dilemma that you've wrestled with all these years. The chicken came first. The egg was a response to that. God created the chicken first in the day he created birds. And by the way, birds and fish were created on the same day. That's pretty problematic for evolution. One 24-hour period, evening and morning. Those words are never used metaphorically like day and night are. Evening and morning means literal evening and morning. That's all it ever means in the Bible. Evening and morning, one day. You know what it means by morning, right? You know what evening means? Again, how you define these terms, you say, well, I think morning's from 6 to noon. Okay. I think evening is from 6 to whatever you think it is. I don't know, 5. But it's a short period. It's a shorter period. And so Genesis is very plain and straightforward here. God did this in one day. Fish and birds created on the same day. Well, how are you going to reconcile that with the evolutionary thought process? You can't. They're in complete antagonism and contradiction to one another. So again, you watch these people. And I watch today as they seek to rewrite history. So they're going to argue about the Civil War like it never existed. Or they're going to remove every vestige of the fact. This is just revisionist history. Once again, I've told you this is what they've done for a long time, and they're still doing it. Only now it's becoming more pronounced. Now they're making it overt. And so they're going to get rid of all these, quote, bad things that symbolized a bad period in our history. Well, that doesn't mean it didn't happen, does it? You can get rid of all the deal. You say, well, these are symbols of hatred. I thought they were symbols of the fact that the South didn't want to be ruled over by the North, for one thing. I thought it was a rejection of a centralized government in some ways. Because when you read the Constitution, the broad powers are reserved not to the federal government, but to the states. And the federal government continually kept encroaching and usurping these rights. And they're doing it today. Again, we're being set up for the point where all they've got to do is throw, you know, one more monster problem at us and martial law is going to be in effect. We're not far from that. And these nut jobs are running us right towards it. But the reality is, of course, they don't see any of this, and they think their responses are normal. Well, let's eliminate part of our history because we don't like it. Well, let's face it, history is written by the winners, isn't it? The losers don't write it. The winners do. And I looked, and as I was watching that movie, Hacksaw Ridge, it was just reinforced to me. I mean, just the brutality of mankind, the horrible, horrific nature of the actual sin nature. That we will send people into battle, and it's brutal, and over what? An ideology. Oh. And in some cases, not over an ideology, but a desire to make money. That's even worse. War is big bucks. Don't kid yourself. You're probably not ever going to go wrong investing in Boeing and Lockheed Martin and people who make armaments. And as you better know, there has never been an armory constructed that was not used. And so people say, well, they'll never use nuclear weapons. You are a fool. You have ignored all of human history, and so you will be destined to repeat the mistakes of the previous generations. Yes, they will use it. Wait a minute. Just because they have nuclear weapons, they won't use it. Can you spell Hiroshima? Can you spell Nagasaki? Don't tell me we won't use them. Don't tell me idiots out there won't use them. And sure don't look at me and tell me Putin won't use them. He's already told everyone. He's put everyone on notice. He has no problem with limited nuclear warfare. And this is just his rattling the sabers around those little stupid stands that came out of the Soviet Union. And these I call them phony countries. You talk about fake news. You know, the map that I knew as a child, that I learned, and I knew where everything was. And not just nationally, internationally. I knew where the countries were and all that. And I knew most of the capitals. Well, now they, quote, don't exist. Even though it's the very same peoples, indigenous peoples, living there, doing the very same things they've done for thousands of years. So they rewrite and redraw the maps. Well, Putin's already let them know. Ask the Ukraine if Putin's afraid. Ask Georgia. Ask some of these other places. Ask them if Putin and some of the KGB didn't poison some of their leaders and almost kill them. And the fact is, we know that they did. There's pretty good evidence that they did anyway, if we don't know 100%. So again here, the liberal unbeliever, look at the way they respond to things. We feel bad for the murderer. Why? This person took another person's life. They have to forfeit theirs. That's the Bible. That's the law. That's supposed to be the law. And yet, it's not. Well, see, further, believers lacking the stabilizing influence of doctrine often fall prey to the lies and misinformation of the devil's world. Why? Because you're bombarded with... See, I get you 5 hours a week out of 168, a period of a little less or a little more than 2%. And 98% of the time, the rest of the time, you're largely exposed to the cosmos and to its rhetoric. And to the news, whether good, fake, bad, misinformation, disinformation, doesn't matter what it is. One, they want to keep it in your ear all the time. Can you imagine the proliferation? I mean, back in my day, I was, again, 60s, when I was a child, was conscious of, you know, by the time I was 6, I was 60. By the time I was 6, yeah, it was 60, I mean, I wasn't 60. I wasn't 6 and 60 simultaneously, if that's what you think. But by the time I was 6, you know, you got the news at 5 o'clock at night, and you got about a half hour or an hour of it, and that was it. Why do we need 74 24-hour news channels? And what is the news they're giving us? If you watch our local news here on Channel 7, well, WUSP, as I call it, WWSB, look at the crap they pass as news. Oh, there's a heartwarming story about a puppy out of a well. Oh, look at these little ducks. This is news? And by the way, what the news they are giving me, in what way does it help me, or can I do anything about it or anything else? Half the news, quote, they're giving me is from around the world. Which, by the way, I'm just better off not knowing because I can't do anything about it. And again, and this is all modern technology and its brilliance and what it's done for us. And so we're deluged with this constant stream of misinformation, disinformation. Even good information is mixed in there, but it gets lost in the shuffle sometimes, as you might imagine. Well, so D, although one may be a believer and possess some measure of doctrine in the soul, there still exists the possibility of responding to the corrupt influences of the world, the flesh, or the devil. And we just have to know that going in. This is why we're here, to prepare you. To equip you, to let you know, look, your emotional response may or may not be correct. You better stop and think about it in terms of doctrine. And as I think Jonah was asked, do you have good cause to be angry, Jonah? You bet I do. Did Jonah have good cause to be angry? No. Was he mad at God? Oh, yes. Yes, very mad at God. And at that point, I think he hated God. And you say, well, a believer can't hate God. Oh, please. Oh, please. You've never had it up to here with God? And said, you never threw a hissy fit and said you're quitting? I have. I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying it's true. It's part of confessing your sins to one another. Now, I struggle with this too. Now, it's not like it happens every day, but still it happens. And so, again, you have to admit, well, okay, I've got a potential that I might not be right. What? Now, let's all say that together. I might not be right. Now, I hear everybody, Ron might not be right. No, you may not be right. I may not be right. All of us may not be right. We have to stop and think, okay, how does this square with what I actually believe to be true? All right, well, our time's gone. We're going to have to stop there today. We will continue on with this on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship with the things of the truth. We thank you for the positive volition you have assembled in this area and pray that you would sanctify this information to our spiritual growth and greatness, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.